Part 16. The flame begins to burn more brightly. The guardian of the Baha'i Faith, Shoghi Effendi, has preserved for all time a picture of the moving spectacle which took place in March 1909, when Abdu'l-Bahá, after overcoming half a lifetime of obstacles and opposition, finally placed the holy dust of the Bab beneath the shrine he had built to receive that precious gift. Abdu'l-Bahá, he has written, had the marble sarcophagus transported with great labor to the vault prepared for it. And in the evening, by the light of a single lamp, he laid within it with his own hands, in the presence of believers from the east and from the west, and in circumstances at once solemn and moving, the wooden casket containing the sacred remains of the Bab and his companion. When all was finished and the earthly remains of the martyr prophet of Shiraz were at long last safely deposited for their everlasting rest in the bosom of God's holy mountain, Abdu'l-Bahá, who had cast aside his turban, removed his shoes, and thrown off his cloak, bent low over the still open sarcophagus, his silver hair waving about his head and his face transfigured and luminous, rested his forehead on the border of the wooden casket and, sobbing aloud, wept with such a weeping that all those who were present wept with him. That night he could not sleep, so overwhelmed was he with emotion. Once again, we see the unique and mysterious tie that binds the Baha'i Faith to its followers in the West. Abdu'l-Bahá sent a letter to the Baha'is of the world announcing this glorious victory. He also told them that no sooner had he returned to his home than a cablegram was received informing him that the Baha'is of America had held their first official convention and had decided on the site and construction of the first Baha'i house of worship in the West. Abdu'l-Bahá had written as far back as 1893, the year after Baha'u'llah's passing, that his father's faith would someday have great success in the North American continent. His enemies had hooted in derision at such words from a helpless, condemned prisoner who might be executed at any hour. Yet in that very year, 1893, the Baha'i Faith was first mentioned in the West at the World's Parliament of Religion. Luo was but one of many who was immediately intrigued by that announcement. A year later, Thornton Chase became the first Baha'i in the West. Luo followed rapidly upon his heels. Others quickly joined them. Then, as we have seen, in December 1898, Lua and her fellow pilgrims landed for the first time in the Holy Land. Although these first pilgrims were as yet blind to the great significance of that event, Abdu'l-Bahá understood it only too well. What a flood of joy and gratitude to Baha'u'llah must have swept over him as he looked upon their faces, the very first rays of a dawning light in the West. Abdu'l-Bahá was soon to write, "The West hath acquired illumination from the East, but in some respects, the reflection of the light hath been greater in the Occident. He also declared that the East hath verily been illumined with the light of the kingdom, and ere long will this same light shed a still greater illumination upon the West. Abdu'l-Bahá could well have been referring to such teachers as Lua when he said, "The Blessed Perfection, Baha'u'llah, knows that day and night, rather every hour, I'm looking toward the East and toward the West, toward the North and toward the South, to see whether severed and attracted souls have arisen to teach the cause of God, whether enkindled hearts are raising their clarion voices in the assemblages of mankind. These souls, they are my lost jewels. Whenever I find a trace of them, or someone gives me a clue about them, I become infinitely happy, and adding to my zeal, I continue my indefatigable search. I pray to God that he may give me many such jewels in America." Exciting new teaching victories were taking place on every front, but still Lua suffered greatly because her heart longed to be with Abdu'l-Bahá. She was never truly happy away from him. The only way Lua could feel the agonizing loneliness of separation from her beloved master was to lose herself completely in the teaching work. She rededicated her entire life to spreading the glad tidings of Baha'u'llah's coming. Lua knew that teaching was her only salvation, but little did she know that it would win for her the crown of Mother Teacher of the American Baha'i Community. Abdu'l-Bahá had told Lua time and time again, "Day and night thou must engage in spreading the teachings of Baha'u'llah. Nothing else will avail thee," he had said. Lua longed to become one of Abdu'l-Bahá's lost jewels. Perhaps then it might be possible for her to return to the Holy Land. She forgot everything but teaching the Word of God. She began to plant the seeds in all parts of America. Lua's life became a living example of the words of Baha'u'llah. "Be unrestrained as the wind while carrying the message of God. It bloweth in every direction as bidden by its Creator." Lua prayed constantly that her reckless and unsubdued spirit would quickly learn the lesson of patience. One of her colleagues said she was impatient to be patient. It was not an easy lesson for her. Lua felt certain that Abdu'l-Bahá was waiting for her to win this struggle, and if she could achieve this victory over herself, he would open before her eyes new doors of service.